Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. That's right, it is Friday, December 4th, 2020. First off, shout out to the good bros, all of my fellow brethren of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. It is our Founders Day, always a special day in my heart and the hearts of alphas all across this world. But as we push along here, you know, there's a few ways I could do today's show. Of course, Michigan State men's basketball will be tipping off against Detroit Mercy later on around 5 p.m. Also, Michigan State football will be playing Maryland tomorrow. But you know what? I've been hearing a lot of you say, hey, Al, I love the throwback shows. It just brings back so many memories, so many great guests, back to a time of normalcy around here. And you know what? I wanted to do that today. You know, I want to do a flashback Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports, if you will. And I want to focus on the combat sporting world. Well, today's Current Sports, you are going to hear about a local boxer by the name of Tommy Washington Jr., who has certainly had one rough life. Let's just put it that way. And you'll hear how he overcame that to become a premier boxer right here in the area. And also, one of the most famous voices in all of sports. You guys know the famous, let's get ready to rumble saying. Yeah, that's Michael Buffer, right? I mean, you've heard that before. Countless major boxing events featuring some of the best fighters in the world. Well, do you remember when Michael Buffer came on Current Sports to talk about his journey? Well, if you don't, you're in for a treat today because we also have that chat for you guys. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this Flashback Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports.
Let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. We actually have two additional voices that will now join me here live in Studio S. First, I want to start by bringing in Austin Short, who has been doing a great job along with our other Current Sports PAs and beat reporters. Austin, you are a big fight fan.
No doubt about it.
We've had conversations about that. And coming in this semester, that's what you wanted your beat to be. And I found your latest story to be so intriguing on so many levels because he has such a great story. Tommy Washington Jr., you have a piece that's live right now via WKAR.org centered on his life. I just briefly want you to tell our listeners about that story. Not too many specifics because we have him right now live here in Studio West. We're going to get into his story in just a bit. But what was it like talking with Tommy?
It was really just a treat because I was, you know, I hadn't known that much about him. I had heard that he was fighting at the Ron DeLeon promotions, the last fight he put on. And, you know, I was interested in talking to him and seeing him fight. Unfortunately, that got scrapped. So then after that, I was looking up, you know, what he was doing. And I had heard about his work with the Lansing Spartan Youth Organization, which is helping out the youth and training them in boxing and just overall just giving them like a bond with fitness, you know, mm-hmm. trying to keep the kids out of the streets and keep them healthy.
Well, we have him right next to you. To your left, my right, Tommy Washington Jr., Lansing Boxing. Great. First off, Tommy, thank you so much for taking some time out your week here on this Thursday afternoon to join us here in Studio S. How you doing, my man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Tommy, I want to start very elementary here and then kind of work our way through your story. Your love of boxing began with, I should say, ideally the same way that a lot of young men's interest peaks in the world of sports. I mean, my dad introduced me to the world of sports, and your dad did the same, right? Your love of boxing began with your father. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, at a very young age, you know, my father used to fight himself, you know, professionally, and he basically had me in the gym with him all the time, whether he was running or whatever. I'm soaking up everything at a young age, so it was like my first love, you know, so I just picked up everything.
What were some of your earliest memories of your pops? Because he won the Michigan Gold Gloves, I understand, back in 1981. Do you remember watching him during your young years? And what really stood out to you about your dad when it comes to the sport of boxing?
Man, I can remember him, like, using me as weight. You know what I mean? Like, he jogging the river, you know, the river walk, and having me on his neck. I remember memories like that, just like, you know, it's like clear to me that, you know, you should use me as like a workout tool, man. You know what I mean?
So right.
I can remember stuff like that, man, just being around the gym.
When did he start to teach you about the sport? And was he gung-ho about teaching you the sport off bat at such a young age?
Well, no, you know, he always was showing me bits and pieces. You know, he didn't put too much on me, but it was like fifth grade. He took me to the boxing gym, like, soon as school let out. Like, for the summer, he took me to the boxing gym. And from there, it was just up and running, man, you know.
Why did you take to the sport? What about boxing really intrigued you and made you want to pursue it?
I say it was more like channeling the energy in me to something positive, because I always kind of not say had a temper. But, you know, you could be overactive. You got a gear, you know, shifted towards something. So, you know, they put me in the ring with it, and it worked out, man.
Were you one of those kids that used to get in a fight at school at all?
Yeah,
you
were? Yeah, that was just, yeah, oh, yeah.
Can you give me an example of that?
Man, it was just like, I can remember, like, earliest first or second grade, just fighting, and the teacher, like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, you know, so it was good that he put me in that to get the discipline to, you know when to, you know, right, defend yourself, man.
Now, were you the one starting the fights, or were you just kind of protecting yourself from bullies?
Probably both.
A mix of both,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, probably both.
At 9 years old, Tommy, you won a junior Olympic tournament. Is that the moment when you started to figure out or when it hit you that you were pretty good at this boxing thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was very easy. I'm not going to say easy, but it was like, it felt like I was doing what I was supposed to do at that age. Like, I knew what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? It was
right.
Like, it hit me. Because, you know, I gave that first medal to my mother. You know, she still got it to this day. But it was like, that's a pretty big tournament for youth. So to win that, it was like, you know what I mean? It was like, man, I couldn't believe it. But then I embraced it in the same breath. You know, like, this is what I want to do, man.
What was the reaction from your pops? Was he happy that you were following in his footsteps?
Oh yeah. He's like my number one fan and motivator and everything else, man. It's like, not to say he lived through me, but he's on me. Like, come on, man, let's, you know, it's almost like he about to fight, man. I gotta calm him down, and I'm the one getting in the ring, you know.
Right, exactly. Now is he your current trainer right now?
Yes, yeah.
He's always been your trainer then.
Yeah, always, yeah. Him and Reggie Askew.
Gotcha.
Yep. Yeah.
Tommy, you captured 5 amateur national titles. At 15, you were invited to a very big event at Northern Michigan University.
Yeah.
Talk about that. What was that event?
It was the Junior Olympic Invitational. They send you an invite to come up there to the campus.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a camp where you was there for, I think it was like 6 weeks. I don't remember, but I know we was there for amount of time, and you got people from all over New York. It was even people from Canada, England, all that. We all working out together. It was like everybody that was the top of their weight class.
Right.
They was there. They was invited to work out and compete. It was kind of like international competition. You know, I was there with like Adrian Broner.
Broner was there.
Things like that. Yeah. Andre Durrell.
Wow.
Like people that was, just like, you know, regular that got a name now, you know what I'm saying? We was all in the same camp.
What was it like seeing Adrian Broner and Darrell?
I mean, at the time, we was just all regular kids, you know, it was just, you know, right. You know what I mean? Like, we all know we had a special gift, but it was just like, what's up? How you doing? You know, just kicking and chilling, man. You know, it wasn't really, you know, the AB that you might see now or this or that. You know, that's what it grew into. But we're just regular kids having fun, man.
Comparing your skill to theirs at the time, Tommy, you felt like you could run with them, right, at the time? Yeah. I mean, you were invited.
That can bring out, you know, that type of elite competition, man.
Before we get to your future fights in the world of boxing, I want to fast forward now to age 16.
Okay.
Because that's when a bit of the trouble with the law started, yeah. Right? Armed robbery and larceny, 6 months on the tether.
Right.
What started to happen in your life around that time, the atmosphere around you? What started to really change around you that kind of led to that trouble?
Well, it was the crazy part about it. It was right after that invitational that was up north at Northern University. You know, I came back. I remember coming back, you know, just proud of myself for what I did. And it was kind of like my dad was like, you know, man, you deserve a little time off. I think that was the biggest mistake ever. Not him saying the time off, but just not being active with what I was doing because it keep you busy, you know what I mean? So
right. It
gave me time to wander, and next thing you know, I'm in the midst of just your environment, man. You know, when I was doing that, I was out of my environment. I'm going to Cali, I'm going to Kansas, I'm traveling. There's no time for no, you know, frivolous activities, man, so.
What kind of activities? Who'd you start hanging out with, and what exactly started to happen?
People that you think is that's your friends, you know what I mean? You hanging around the wrong crowd, man, you know what I mean? And it's not necessarily the wrong crowd. It's just people in your neighborhood. You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm. For you, Tommy, I know you were expecting a daughter around that time.
Right.
And you had dropped out of high school.
Yes,
you went
sir.
To Lansing Section, right?
Yes, sir.
How tough was it trying to find your way and knowing in the back of your head that, man, you got a baby on the way and trying to provide for that baby that was on the way? I mean, where was your headspace at that time? Tommy. I mean,
it was all a struggle, man, because, you know, you want to do the best in everything. You want to provide her with the best. But in the same breath, you still a child yourself. So you trying to figure everything out. So it was like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. And it was like kind of like by any means necessary to make sure she has anything that she needs. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I brought her into this world. You know what I mean? So it was like I got to provide. So that was my mindset, man. So it was like, you know, amateur boxing kind of was on the back burner because it wasn't paying.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It wasn't, you know, I needed.
Not lucrative, right?
No, it wasn't. You know what I mean? So it was like things that happen, you know?
So knowing that you have a baby on the way and knowing that you have to somehow, some way get money, you drop out of high school. Where did you start to work?
Where did you
try to work?
Well, I tried to get like, you know, like factory jobs, things like that, you know, and then, you know, with that type of stuff, they'll use you until they don't need you no more. So it was like hit and miss. You might be working and you think it's something working for you and it's not. You know what I mean? Next thing you know, oh, we don't need you. We'll get you a call if we need you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that don't pay no bills.
So after that happened, what was plan B for you?
I mean, it was really just freestyling, anything. You know, I used to go to the auctions with my uncle and buy used cars from, like, the Volunteers of America, resell. You know, it was like, it was different avenues. It wasn't just one thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with local boxing great Tommy Washington Jr., his trials and tribulations throughout this this thing we call life. And again, now he has some great things coming up that we want to get to in just a moment. I want to get to when you got involved with drugs, Tommy.
Okay.
I know that there was a time, a summer day in 2010, where the police actually raided your apartment. And that was the moment for you. But prior to that, when did you get involved with the drug dealing game?
I mean, I had an injury that occurred. A lot of people don't know that I had an injury that occurred to my shoulder where I messed up my rotator cuff. So I was kind of out on injury. Mm-hmm. And now I'm expecting my second child. My second child.
So your first child was already born at that point.
Yeah, at that time, yeah, you know. And it was a lot of things going on. So really I was planning on relocating and things really ain't work out like that. So I called myself, you know, doing what I was doing, which was illegal, you know, selling drugs and things like that to compensate, you know, trying to make things work. But, you know, end up backfiring, but it was also a blessing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was also
It definitely was.
Yeah.
Take us to that day. Summer of 2010. It's a late evening day. I imagine you're at home.
Right.
What happened?
I mean, you know, the local, whatever, police or they special task force, you know, raided my home, you know, off of tips of drug dealing and things like that. And from there, it was just a roller coaster ride, you know.
When they come through the door, Tommy, what was your first thought?
Man, who was this? I mean, it was just so quick, you know, it ain't like they letting you know they coming. So it was a surprise, man, you know, it was a hell of a surprise.
Let's hit our second break here. When we come back, we will continue to talk about the story of Tommy Washington Jr., his time spending nearly 3 years in prison and getting out of prison and trying to get his life back on track. Don't miss that, folks. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, and right here live in Studio S, we are chatting with local Lansing boxing great Tommy Washington Jr. We have started by addressing his interest in the sport. We ended prior to that last break there talking about when his apartment was raided back in 2010. A moment that led to a nearly 3 year stint in prison. Now, Tommy, I believe that was a cocaine and gun charge.
Yeah, it was a possession of cocaine and a felony firearm.
So you go to prison. First off, where were you put? What correctional institution were you put at?
I was in St. Louis for majority of my stay. St. Louis, Michigan.
Okay, you were in St. Louis.
Yeah, it's like called Central Michigan Correctional Facility or something like that.
Tommy, what was prison like?
Man, hell. I mean, to sum it up, it was like, you know, I felt out of place, but then in the same breath, you know, it was like I had to get my mental together about what I was going to do with the rest of my life because that place can be a revolving door. Mm-hmm. You know, it's people that have been in there several times, and that was my first time coming in. So it was all about just getting myself together to figure out what I'm going to do once I'm released, you know.
Tommy, take us inside because, you know, I actually, and it's a documentary that affected me unlike any documentary I've seen. I don't know if you know about the Kalief Browder story. It's been airing on Spike TV and I watched part five last night, but I want to go to a particular part of that documentary that talked about Kalief's time in prison and the cliques and the gangs. And just trying to survive. He spent over 400 days in solitary confinement and absolutely went insane.
Wow.
Take us inside. What was that like for you and how nasty of a place is it? How did you try to just survive day to day?
Well, when I was at Central Michigan in St. Louis, it was one of the most violent prisons in Michigan at that time where it was violence everywhere you went. It was stabbings. I mean, it was things that went on that wasn't addressed, like on TV. You're not getting no news flash, breaking news, or things like that. So it was pretty much like open season for violence. So it was really like every man for themselves. You know, of course, it's cliques and gangs and stuff like that. You know, never been involved with nothing like that. But it was just about making sure you was all right, man. You know what I mean? Making sure you was straight, you know, which involved, like, I didn't really play basketball with people, that star stuff. You know, it was just little things you had to do to make sure you wasn't in the midst of, you know, something that could turn ugly real quick. You know, card games, things like that, you know. It get real serious, like, for a little bit of nothing, man. Really, you know, it really didn't take much.
Did you have inmates try and push your buttons and get underneath your skin at all?
Yeah, of course. You know, everybody in there get tried. You know, I had a few tried, but, you know, it was like, you know, once I took care of my business, it wasn't, you know, word spread. You know, he really stayed to himself, but don't bother him. You know what I mean? So, really ain't had that problem but one time.
Did they know who you were? I mean, you're a boxer, for goodness sake. I mean, there aren't too many guys picking on a boxer in
here. I mean, once I put my demonstration down from where somebody was, you know, it was kind of spread. It like, man, you know, he a real humble, cool guy, but don't mess with him. You know what I mean? Things like that. So that kind of follow you.
I'm curious, what happened in that initial incident?
I mean, you know, it you know, like the phone. The phone is something very important in there, and it was kind of an issue over the phone. And you know what I mean? It's a hot summer day. It don't really take too much in there to, you know, get you to that level because you already, you know, you're incarcerated, man. You're away from your people, so, you know, it don't really take too much.
Was there a moment while you were in prison, Tommy, where you said, man, once I get out of here, I got to make sure that I don't end up back here. Was there a moment where it really hit you, the reality of the situation, the magnitude of the situation? And when did you start to plan what you were going to do once you got out?
Man, it was like, and it might sound kind of crazy, it was like my first year. Like after the first year it sunk in, like, dang, I got two more years to go. I'm like, I'm really here. Ain't no going home tomorrow or nothing like that. Like, you in here, man, you know, so it was reality kind of set in and I started planning, you know, what I'm going to do, man. And I figured, you know, my boxing been my life forever, man. I used that as my, you know, tool for everything else. So while I was in there, I used that time to condition myself to go ahead and get out and compete, man.
Your kids, you have are they two sons or you have
a son? I got two sons and a daughter.
Two sons and a daughter.
Yes.
What was that time like for your family, in particular the kids?
Man, it's heartbreaking. It could either it's sad, man, because you know that time away from them, you know, affects them more than anything. You know, you know they going through everyday life without you. You know, like me and my daughter was so close. You know, I mean, that's my firstborn. You know, it kind of, not say separated us, but it put a little something on it where she was going through those teenage years right there and I wasn't there for certain things. So, you know, it's, man, you know. Yeah.
April of 2014 is when you were released and you got out of prison, right?
Yeah, April 15th.
April 15th of 2014.
Yeah, that was the best day of my life, man.
You get out. What was that transition like, trying to assimilate back into regular society?
Man, what I did was, like, I put too much on myself all at once. I had got a job. I'm trying to work out. I'm trying to, you know, do everything all at once. And it kind of just sucked me in probably like a month or two into, I'm working like 12-hour shifts.
And where were you working at?
At the time, Bridgewater.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at Bridgewater doing the stuff with the interior. And, I'm working shifts, third shift at that. So I'm all night. In the morning, I got to go to the gym. So it was like I'm trying to do all of that. I just crashed, man.
You crashed?
Yeah, I crashed, man.
So, and this is shortly after you get out of prison. Yeah. I mean, you're trying to do too much. So your body lets you know that, hey, you got to slow this down
crashed,
a bit.
Man, yeah.
How did you balance that? I mean, what did you, because in order to try and balance working and hitting the gym, and then you have kids and all that kind of stuff, and your body needs sleep and rest. Something has to give there. I mean, did you take less time working and dedicate more time boxing, less time boxing and in the gym, and more time dedicated to your family and work? What did you do?
Well, at the time, I kind of quit both. It just sat back to evaluate what do I really want to put my time into? Because, you know, I can get these people 60 hours a week and not follow my dream, or I could follow my dream and put all that time into my dream, making a reality. So I had to really sit back and battle with the two, because, you know, one is a guaranteed check, you know, you get paid every week, and the other one is what you chasing. You know, it ain't no guarantees, and it's, you know, some people is scared to chase stuff that, you know, it's not paying right then and there. You know, you following something that's, in all reality, it's a dream until you make it a reality, you know?
So, just a dollar in a dream, right? Yeah. It's going to be, it's now all going to be rainbows, dude. You right. got to go through if you want that breakthrough.
Yeah, you got to.
I'm sure you leaned on a lot. Your dad, Tommy Washington Sr.
Oh, yeah,
what did your dad tell you during that time?
You know, he just told me to take my time. You know, you know he always say, you're still a young man. Take your time and figure out everything you want to do. And, you know, make your next move your best move, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Put everything together, mm-hmm. you know, and don't try to put too much on your plate, you know. Have a plan with everything you want to do, man, you know.
For sure.
So I really lean towards him a lot to this day, you know. You know, he helped me out a lot, man. He got a lot of wisdom because he done been there, you know. He done been through the Army. He done been through everything, you know. So he'd be telling me, like, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, man.
I know you all reached out to a contact out in California yeah. for that first fight.
Yeah.
Wait. And you actually won that first fight, too, right?
Right.
And who was that contact, and what was that first fight like for you?
It was Whit Hayden. He a good matchmaker out there. He's under Golden Boy Promotions. Well, he actually deals with a lot of different promotions, but mm-hmm. he's a big guy on the West Coast. It was on the HBO undercard, man, and that's when... I'm not going to say the confidence came back, but that's when everything just kind of tied into it. Like, just keep working hard. It's going to pay off.
Because mm-hmm.
I was working hard. They called. I'm like, man, I'm ready to go take care of this and did what I had to do, man.
Since that win on HBO, how many fights have you had since? And what where's your record stand right now, Tommy?
Well, since that fight I had, I had about five fights since then, and we about, like, split. We half and half on it, so, you know, won a couple and I lost a couple, so.
7-10 right now, right?
Yes, sir.
You have a fight coming up now?
Pretty soon, May 6th, we trying to lock in a date.
We're trying
to actually lock in the venue, all the contracts and everything else signed.
Okay.
For the venue, or where we going to throw it at.
Okay.
And... that's going to be here in Lansing, so.
I tell you what, this is turning into quite the story, Tommy. Austin, if you want to chime in here and kind of elaborate on, this May 6th possible fight, I know that there is a pretty big name that may be coming through.
Yeah, I saw via your Facebook that the May 6th event could possibly have a special guest, and he... holds a special place in my heart because I got the Flock Belly album in 2011. So why don't you tell the people who could possibly be there?
I mean, it's a possibility. It's a couple possibilities. A couple different celebrities might be there. But a good friend of mine, Greg Mock,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's a very successful businessman. He actually is going into the promotion business for the boxing. So, you know, he's very well connected. And he introduced me to a friend of his, which is Waka Flocka, you know what I mean? And it was real nice meeting him, you know, things like that. And he pretty much was, you know, he interested in the fight game itself. So, you know, it's a strong possibility he might come check out the fight in May, you know, so.
And for some of our seasoned listeners out there who don't know who the heck we're talking about, Waka Flocka is a pretty big hip-hop artist in the world of the hip-hop community. Yeah. I know our average listenership is pretty up there, Austin, so I had to clarify that.
Right.
So I saw on, as you just stated, Austin, I saw on your profile pic on Facebook,
right.
You know, Waka's talking on it, and it's you next to Waka.
Right.
What was it like meeting him for the first time?
Man,
What kind of person is he?
He real humble, man. It's just like, hey, what's up, man? You know, he was eating the fresh fish, you know, the cracked chicken.
I was there the other day, brother.
He just real laid back, man. It was just like, you know, and that's the type of people that you, like, look up to because, you know, he in a great position, man. You know, and it's just like, you know,
mm-hmm.
you remain down to earth, man. And it was real nice meeting him, man. It was real, real cool, man, you know.
So it's not set in stone just yet, right? You guys are trying to
put everything together, okay. But, you know, definitely if not that one in the future, you're going to be there. But
okay.
Either way you look at it, you know, it's going to be star-studded events. That's what we're bringing back here to Lansing.
Even if Waka doesn't come on May 6th, that event is still taking place. Is that set in stone?
Yeah, that's set in stone. Actual venue, we're trying to figure out that as we speak. Everything is looking real good. So.
And you will be fighting in that event?
Yes, sir.
That is great stuff. Tommy, do you know who you're going to be fighting?
Not yet. We got to get with the matchmakers and, you know, everything. It's a process, but... You know, Counterpunch Promotions, man. Greg Mock, he bringing good things to the community, man.
Tommy Washington Jr., it has absolutely been a pleasure having you on Current Sports. We got to have you back. Would you come back?
Oh, yeah. Anytime, man. Anytime. Just let me know.
The most anticipated match in the history of professional wrestling for the heavyweight championship of the world. Are you ready? For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, from the capital city of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Ladies and gents, his name is synonymous with the sport of boxing and professional wrestling. Born and raised in Philly, Michael Buffer began his ring announcing career in 1982, and by 1984, he developed the catchphrase, "Let's get ready to rumble." Gotta love that, right? Which gained enormous popularity. His one-of-a-kind work has led him to announce events like the World Series, Stanley Cup Finals, NBA Finals, and even NFL playoff games. So many athletes have admired his work as well. For example, the great Sugar Ray Leonard once said, quote, "When Buffer introduces a fighter, it makes him want to fight." It's my pleasure to welcome to Current Sports, Michael Buffer. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing fantastic. It is certainly a pleasure to have you on the show. Now, Mike, to start our conversation, I want to first talk about, you know, the very, you know, first stages of where you, you know, what got you to where you are right now. And I want to first talk about your childhood. Doing some research here, I know that at 11 months, your parents were, I believe, divorced, and you were raised by foster parents. What was your childhood like, Mike?
Oh, I had a great childhood. I was really lucky to end up with the best family ever, and I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia with, you know, I always refer to them as mom and dad, and it was a leave it to Beaver childhood in the 50s and early 60s.
And also, of course, at age 20, you enlisted in the Army during the Vietnam War,
right,
and served until you were 23. What made you enlist in the Army, Mike?
In 65, the Vietnam really began to escalate, and they were drafting everything that moved. And including draftees were being sent into the Army, Navy, Marines, et cetera. And I knew I didn't want to be on anything on water. And the Marines basically are just predominantly, you know, infantry and combat forces. And the Army had, if you enlist, you give an extra year instead of the 2-year draft. You go in for 3, and you get to choose a vocation, or an MOS, as they say in the military. And I ended up being a photographer in the Army.
Wow. What was that experience like for you?
That was great. I really enjoyed my 3 years, but that's only because I would, you know, a lot of things in life are luck, and in 3 years in the Army during the 65 to 68, with everything that was happening in Southeast Asia, I never got west of Fort Knox, Kentucky. So it's just a matter of luck, because I had plenty of buddies that, you know, went there and survived, and then quite a few that didn't. So, you know, I consider myself blessed.
Without a doubt. Now, Mike, so in many ways, you go from being behind the camera as a photographer during that time to in front of it and embarking on a modeling career. How did that come about, my man?
Well, I got out of the Army, and I was a car salesman for quite a few years, and married, divorced, had a couple of young sons, and when being single again, I was dating a girl that was a model, and she gave me the name of her agent, and I just one thing led to another, and I found myself doing you know, runway and print work, and I said, "Wow, they pay you to do this." So it was that worked out pretty well. It's a great way to make a living, and but I was a sports fan, and with all the boxing that was going on, I lived in Philadelphia. You know, I used to work in New York and Philadelphia, and all the things that were going on in Atlantic City with the booming casino business at that time. They had boxing 3, 4, and sometimes 5 nights a week. And I got my foot in the door, and it just took off.
Now, I got to know, Mike, of course, I mean, your voice. I mean, anytime I tune in, because I'm still a big, you know, boxing aficionado to this day. Anytime I see that you are doing a fight, hearing you announce a fighter, it just sort of puts it in perspective. Kind of like that Sugar Ray Leonard quote. It just makes you want to fight. You know that it's game time. For you, I got to know, though. What was your first experience like when you first walked into the ring with the cue cards and are reading off and introducing fighters? I mean, what were your nerves like, and why did you want to embark on this career? How did you get started?
Yeah, I was dreadful. It was I was nervous as hell.
Stop it, really?
My hands were shaking, and I didn't even know how to read a scorecard, and somehow I managed to get through the night. And I didn't get any more job offers for a while, and I sort of, like, you know, I managed to, I recorded that night. It was on USA, the Tuesday Night Fights on USA, and I looked at it, and I said, well, I know what I have to do to be better, and I got another break somewhere, and you know, just tried to be better, which I still do to this day. I always try to be better.
Well, what mistakes did you make in that first fight that you look back on?
What did I do? What did I do that was wrong?
Yeah.
Everything. It was just, it was lousy. It was a bad night.
Okay. Well, moving on, of course, you have become a staple in the fighting world. And of course, many people out there, I mean, I mean, when we first announced that you would be coming on the show, of course, the question that everyone wants to know is how in the world the catchphrase, "Let's get ready to rumble." How did that start? What? How did one night you go out there and say, you know what, let me try this, and what made it stick?
Yeah, you know, there was, I found out that the ring announcers at that time, this is like back in 82, 83, were all introducing the entire boxing commission. And what that, you know, that plus if you had a WBC, WBA, IBF component to the introductions, then you had to introduce the president of that organization and their supervisor. So now you're introducing 4 doctors, 3 judges, a referee, 4 commissioners, a chairman, an executive director. And you killed the crowd, because at that point where I'm introducing all those people, it's right after the fighters made these entrances to the ring with music and excitement. It was electric, and it's the main event. And then ding, ding, and you're reading off all these names that nobody knows, nobody cares about. It was basically ego gratification for, you know, the powers that be. And I wanted something to get a little more energy back into the room and let the fighters know that they're the stars of the show. They deserve, you know, people to be on their feet or you know, really into the introductions. You know, the thing in auto racing, at the Indy 500, 450,000 people go crazy when some little old lady says, gentlemen, start your engines, because that means the action is about to begin. And I wanted to come up with a hook like that. And I tried man your battle stations and, ladies and gentlemen, fasten your seatbelts. And it was just crickets. There was nothing happening out there. And, you know, the great Muhammad Ali used to say that he was, I'm ready to rumble. I'm so pretty. Rumble, young man, rumble. And I liked the sound of that and fine-tuned it to what you hear today with Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
Wow. How cool is that? Now, I understand that since then, of course, you know, years have passed over time. Now, you have trademarked that phrase. Am I right, Mike?
It's a registered trademark, yeah.
It is a registered trademark. And I'm curious to know, through the years, since you've trademarked that phrase, has there been any legal issues that you have and your people and your team have encountered that you had to take a few guys to court for using it? Has that ever happened before?
Yeah, more than quite a few. It pops up, and you know, many times, you know, you'll have a car dealer in Davenport, Iowa, or something that might be using it in a radio commercial, and it's not like the world is going to come to an end, and we have to issue a cease and desist, and you know, explain why, and they understand. But there have been other times where it's come up, and it's damaging to the trademark, whether it's a syndicated radio show that had political views that, you know, may not be too popular with everyone. That can kind of, like, people say, well, Michael Buffer's saying that, and we've had to go to court with some major syndicators and movie studios and a few things in the past, but it's always worked out, and we're batting 1,000 because it is it's intellectual property, and it's you know, exactly what it says, a TM, a registered trademark.
What convinced you to slap a trademark on that phrase, Mike?
It started, you know, it was something that I, you know, created and made popular, and then it was being, you know, picked up. It's no different than writing a song or a play or a script, and you it's intellectual property, something you've made popular, so you want to make sure you own it. It's your property.
Very cool stuff. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with Fame ring announcer Michael Buffer. All right, Mike, I got to bring this up because I am one of the biggest Rocky fans you'll ever meet. I love the franchise, and I actually went to the movie theater not too long ago, and I checked out the Rocky spinoff entitled Creed. Of course, Sly, Sylvester Stallone, he plays the trainer of Apollo Creed. Of course, Sly is playing Rocky. He plays the trainer of Apollo Creed's son, Adonis Creed, who is played by Michael B. Jordan. And watching the film, of course, there were a lot of media types in the film. Hannah Storm, Michael Wilbon, and a few others, Max Kellerman. And also, you know, of course, when during that final fight scene, you are doing the ring announcer. I have to ask you, what was the production of Creed like? And what was your takeaway from the film? How much did you enjoy seeing yourself on the big screen?
Well, first of all, it's I think that's my third Rocky film.
Right.
And what made this particular movie really exceptional was that Rocky is not a fighter now. He's a guy that's in his 60s, the ex-heavyweight champion, and owns a restaurant in Philly, as we saw previously in Rocky Balboa, and Sylvester turns in a great performance. He's nominated for a Golden Globe, and the buzz is that he's probably going to get nominated for an Academy Award. A great performance. But the director, Ryan Coogler, mm-hmm. who did Fruitvale Station, I'm sure you saw that flick, a great independent movie, critically acclaimed. This is one of the really hot writers and directors in Hollywood. And Michael B. Jordan, another excellent actor that's going to just be a superstar. Getting to meet these guys for the first time and work with them was really a treat. And you know, we filmed almost everything in Philadelphia. We used the big green screens that, you know, see a high-tech film work today. You can have battleships and Vikings invading Hastings and everything else. So it's just amazing. And, you know, they made it into an outdoor stadium in Liverpool, England, when he fought Pretty Ricky, who, by the way, who was played by a real fighter, Tony Bellew. I just got back from London, and Tony won the European Cruiserweight Championship.
Oh, boy, I had no idea. Wow, yeah. Pretty Ricky. Nice.
Yeah, so it's a pretty exciting movie with a great climax. And actually, I haven't seen it yet. I couldn't go to the premiere because I was hosting a charity event in Las Vegas the same night. So,
oh, boy, you haven't even seen it.
Everybody's raving about the movie.
It's really unbelievable, Mike, and it gave me the feeling when I left that theater. It gave me the same feeling of when I had when the credits started to roll on the very first Rocky. It's really remarkably done. And looking at Michael B. Jordan, now I saw him in Fruitvale Station. He you know, he's not a small guy in general, but it seemed like he really packed on the pounds, you know, when it comes to his muscle for this film. I mean, how astonished were you at his shape for this film?
He got into great shape. He did a lot of hardcore training. He's an athlete to begin with, and so he just he didn't like bulk up like a bodybuilder, but he just got mean and hard like a really well trained athlete and fighter. And his appearance in the flick is quite astonishing. He really captivates the audience.
Floyd Mayweather, he announced his retirement. He's leaving the game. He was the sport's biggest money getter for quite some time. And a lot of people out there are wondering, what state, how healthy is boxing right now when it comes to looking at the future of it? What is your analysis of the state of boxing today, and where do you see the sport going?
Well, first of all, the sport has become bigger and larger on an international scale. Mm-hmm. As far as big paydays go, we don't really see that in America that much. The driving division behind boxing has always been the heavyweight division, and because of Vladimir and Vitali Klitschko having the titles in that division for 10 years, and fighting in Germany in front of crowds of 50,000 and 60,000 people. Ramon Gonzalez as a flyweight, maybe the pound for pound the best fighter in the world, and just Terrence Bud Crawford from Omaha, Nebraska is a junior welterweight champ. Pacquiao was fighting again. He's fighting Bradley in April. So boxing's alive and well. You're going to see some great, great fights on premium TV. And for me, it's great. I'm 71. I thought I'd be retired by now, but the phone keeps ringing.
Just like how it rang for us to get you here on the show, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's like from The Godfather. Just when I thought I was out, they bring me back in.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, Mike, we unfortunately are out of time, but man, oh man, was this a fantastic chat or what? Again, Michael Buffer, famed ring announcer. Mike, would you mind giving us a little Let's Get Ready to Rumble before we get you off the line?
Well, I can't, you know, for business purposes, I can't use the full trademark.
Oh, man.
But
okay.
I understand you're in Spartan country there, right?
We are, yes.
Yeah. Well, how about this? Let's get ready for Sparty!
Now, that was hot. We are certainly going to use that time and time again. Mike, thanks so much for your time. It was a pleasure.
All right, take care.
You do the same.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that was a great look back, right? Shout out to Tommy Washington Jr., who is still fighting to this day, and Michael Buffer, who is still in the ring announcing many, many big-time events. All right, folks, again, Michigan State men's basketball taking on Detroit Mercy today at 5 p.m., and then tomorrow, Michigan State football will try to get another dub, this time looking to get that dub against the University of Maryland. We will recap it all on the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. But in the meantime, I want you all to be safe, be smart, have a great weekend, and be easy, people.